Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Port Westward, owned and operated by the Port of St. Helens, is ground zero for a string of controversial fossil fuel developments, including fracked gas, coal, and oil terminals. The port recently announced plans to renew a lease option with Northwest Innovation Works to build the world's largest fracked gas to methanol refinery at Port Westward. Today we talk about what it would mean to rural Columbia County if it becomes home to the largest methanol refinery in the world. Our guests include Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, Columbia Riverkeeper's point person for opposing methanol refineries in the Northwest, along with Scott Hilgenberg, who's the Land Use Fellow at Craig Law Center, and they're here in the studio. And we just lost our other guest, who's going to be here by phone from Columbia County, Tracy Prescott McGregor, who's a farmer in Columbia County, and we'll have her on in a moment. But meanwhile, Jasmine and Scott, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, it was just a few weeks ago, I was talking with Diane Dick from Longview, who's been fighting the Kalama methanol refinery. And we were talking then about that was the world's largest proposed methanol refinery. So how is it that there's another world's largest methanol refinery proposed right across the river, and which is going to be bigger?
Right. So the truth is there are two proposed methanol refineries along the Columbia River, and they're both tied for the title of world's largest fracked gas to methanol refinery. The project would bring in fracked gas, refine it into liquid methanol, and ship it overseas to China to make plastics. The project in Kalama is probably the furthest along. It's begun the permitting process, and we're halfway through the environmental review stage. The proposal in Port Westward has been was proposed around 4 years ago, and the company hasn't done any forward movement on the project. It's the same company, it's the same backers, it's the same project as the one in Kalama, years behind in terms of permitting.
Well, we have Tracy with us now. Tracy Prescott
Hello.
McGregor is a farmer in Columbia County, and you're going to give us a perspective, Tracy, about we're going to be talking a lot today about what makes this methanol refinery proposal different in a lot of ways than the Kalama one. And so your perspective as a farmer out there is going to be really key. And this brings Scott in. Just recently, the Columbia Riverkeeper and Thousand Friends of Oregon and anybody else? Okay, those two have filed a suit against, a zoning ordinance change that already happened in Columbia County that would permit this methanol refinery actually be built. So I wanted to bring in Tracy to talk about what is the difference between the land where they want to build the methanol refinery in your neck of the woods out near Clatskanie and the one that's being proposed in Kalama.
Well, I'm not very familiar with the topographical situation in Kalama, but I do know that one of the biggest concerns is that they're building on very fragile holes. It's mostly sandy, and one of the things that they have to do in order to make it earthquake-proof is to any facility, any building, it has to be geared so that they have very deep pylons or whatever you would call them down into the sand in order to keep it from the soil from liquefaction during a cascadia. So that's one of the big concerns that I have.
Well, actually, there's another one I was thinking of, Tracy, because we were talking about this before you got on the air. The land in Kalama, even though, as you're describing, it's going to liquefy in an earthquake and it's basically dredge spoils, it is industrially zoned. It's traditionally, historically part of the Port of Kalama. What about the land that they're thinking about where you are? And what is some of your concerns as a farmer about them building a methanol refinery on that particular piece of property?
Well, on another thing about the soils here is that they've been laid down by hundreds of thousands of years of Columbia River flooding before the dikes were built. And some of these soils are class two, which is prime agricultural soils. And we don't have another 200,000 years to rebuild that soil. We need to keep it as agricultural land in order to, as an insurance policy for local food, really, to be able to grow our own food in the case of any catastrophe. If there weren't any roads, Safeway is not going to have deliveries. So you have to have a backup.
So actually, I'm kind of interested in having you describe a little bit about what kind of land is out there. I mean, what does it look like in Columbia County for people in Portland who haven't gotten that far north, or for our listeners in other parts of the country?
We haven't been out here. In the 1920s, the Corps of Engineers dug most of these lands, and they're very flat. They have very high levels because they are, you know, bordering the vast Columbia. They are home to enormous amounts of wildlife. Lots of black cottonwood grows up along the streams and sort of boggy water lands because they like the water. Eagles nest out here in habitat. It's a beautiful place for bird watching, swallows. It's a fabulous place for growing hybrid cottonwood. Greenwood Resources has been out here for quite a few years, and they've been, most of the land is under hybrid cottonwood trees that are used for paper pulp.
So it's basically an industry. I mean, it's a very agricultural community. How much industry is out there at this point?
Well, there's the Greenwood Resources. There is Seeley Mint Farm, who has really expanded in the last 5 or 6 years, and they sell to New Seasons and corporations like that. And there's also cattle farmer who runs GMO beef under the trees. So they're very heavily agriculturally used. Also, there's blueberries out here, and I have been told that 5% of Oregon blueberries are produced out here in the Dike Lands. There's 600 acres of blueberries with Blue Horizons.
So there's not a whole lot of fossil fuel development out there, is there?
Well, this is surrounding the area that we're talking about, the 800 acres that they want to reuse is mostly under cottonwood trees. It also includes the mint farm. And Mike Seeley, who owns the mint farm, is very clear that if it gets rezoned, he's out of business. The agricultural stuff completely surrounds all of the proposed industrial site. And what there was out there for a few years was they were bringing crude and shipping it from on barges out down the Columbia River to the ocean.
Well, Scott, I want to
up to Anacortes.
Scott and Jasmine, I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about the other side of Columbia County, which is there has been some history of fossil fuel development. There's issues with oil trains going through Rainier and Siddons a few years ago, as I recall. So this is not totally pristine agricultural land. So I want to talk a little bit about the tension between the push to make this area part of the fossil fuel growing fossil fuel hub that's being proposed for the Northwest and its historical agricultural roots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so existing in the area that Tracy's describing, blueberries, cattle farms, mint farms, and hybrid poplars, that is the dominant landscape in what's considered the Port Westward area. Sort of an island within that is the actual industrial port facility itself. PGE has two gas-fired power plants there. There have been two proposals for coal export terminals. They were stopped in 2013 and 2014. And there's also a dormant oil-by-rail facility that exists at the current industrial site. And I say dormant because it's a facility that operated as a crude by rail facility, you know, bringing crude in on trains through Portland, cutting through Columbia County, and then shipping it out on barges through the Columbia River. The company Global Partners switched to ethanol a few years ago, but they have maintained their permits for the oil facility. So at any time, whether markets shift, priorities shift, that facility could go back to being an oil terminal. So that's what the island of industrial facility looks like within this agricultural community in this corner of Oregon.
And so Port Westward is kind of isolated, I take it, from the rest of the Port of St. Helens?
The Port of St. Helens owns and operates Port Westward, and they own and operate around 7 different industrial facilities throughout Columbia County.
So, Scott, what is the zoning status of this contested parcel of land?
Well, right now it's a little unclear. In the beginning of the year, the county had approved an ordinance which rezoned the land. And in order to do that, the county had to take an exception to our statewide planning goals. And the Oregon statewide planning goals have been implemented through the beginning of the 1970s in acknowledgement of the importance of our farm and forest land. And because this is great high-value farmland, the county had to take an exception to get the land approved for industrial siting. And because it didn't fulfill the criteria that you need to demonstrate when they made the decision, we appealed it to the Land Use Board of Appeals. So right now it's been contested, and there's a final decision from the local government, but it is being reviewed by the state agency review board.
And what's the feeling amongst the people who are its neighbors in Columbia County?
I know that for a number of people who live along the rail lines and highway in Columbia County, you know, Highway 30 cuts through Columbia County, and all along Highway 30 are the rail tracks. That community is incredibly affected by any increase in rail transportation, especially these unit trains, mile long, of whether it was coal or oil. That blocks people's access to schools, hospitals. It delays commute times. It's a community that's incredibly sensitive to rail transportation. It does not have, I think it only has one or maybe two non-at-grade crossings. So there's no way to, detour around these massive trains that would come through if, the oil train terminal decided to start running again, or another coal terminal proposal was there. And Tracy, I think you can probably speak best to the roller coaster that local farmers have been on for a number of years, trying to protect their farms at Port Westward from these kind of developments.
So Tracy,
sure.
Yeah.
One of the biggest concerns is the that all of this land, as I was describing before, is dike land, soggy and wet, and water moves freely everywhere. So if there is a contamination at any point on Port Westward anywhere, chances are very good within a short period of time that water would carry whatever the pollutants are into our foods. It's just as simple as that.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking today here on Locus Focus about plans to build one of the two largest methanol refineries in the world at Port Westward on the Columbia River, just outside of Clatskanie. And we're talking with, we just heard from Tracy Prescott McGregor, who's a farmer in Columbia County, very close to where this refinery will be built. We also have in the studio with us Scott Hilgenberg, who's a land use fellow at Craig Law Center, and Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey with Columbia Riverkeeper. I want to go back and talk a little bit more about what this methanol refinery is. I mean, there's actually kind of two threads that I'm seeing. This one is that I think a lot of us in Portland kind of think of Columbia County as bucolic, and there's the gas fired power plant in St. Helens, and there's a couple things, and Rainier has some industry, but we think a lot about, as Jasmine was mentioning, blueberries coming from Columbia County and a lot of other food that we eat, and that it's also this kind of bucolic strip as you're heading to Astoria. So the industrialization that's being planned, particularly this shift to fossil fuel industrialization, I think is kind of going under the radar, except for those people who've been sitting on railroad tracks for a few years. So what would be, let's talk first about the methanol refinery and how it's a particular threat, and then how that might also open the door for some other things that might be not really great neighbors to farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when the Port of St. Helens proposed, compiled their application to rezone this farmland, 847 acres of, as Tracy said, high-value agricultural land into industrial use, they had to put together a list of what they thought the land would be used for. And they put together a list of, 7 or 8 different sort of themes. And among them were, petroleum, natural gas or fracked gas, or, fracked gas derivative products. And we saw these as, you know, a continuation of the thread that Port Westward has tried to create over the years of becoming a hub for fossil fuel exports. Existing at Port Westward already is a proposed lease with Northwest Innovation Works, the backer of the Kalama Methanol Refinery. And here we see, you know, around the same time that the lease was signed, an application to expand the industrial footprint for more things of this fossil fuel nature. And we know that from, and we know that this is not a time when we should be investing heavily in fossil fuel infrastructure. This is a time when we need to be very strategic with our investments, and that the products or the projects that we approve today aren't going to disappear in 1 or 2 years. They're going to be with us for the next half century or more. They're going to shape our energy use throughout the entire region, especially these big projects like, you know, the world's largest methanol refinery. And so we have to ask ourselves, not just, you know, what do we want in our community today, but what do we want in our community in 50 years? And those two answers need to align. We can't have a short-term boom and then expect it to transition to clean energy in, you know, a few years down the road. We have to be making those decisions to transition today. And the rezone and, you know, all of the proposed uses that the port was trying to fit into this rezone just don't align with what the land actually is, which is farmland, land that Oregonians voted to put into, you know, strong protections back in the 70s and that we've fought to maintain today.
Well, before we get more into the zoning, which is kind of the focus of today, I wanted to just talk a bit about what is methanol anyway, and what is it used for, and why? What would they be doing in this plant?
Sure. So there's been a huge surge in efforts to export North American fracked gas over to Asia. And the reasons behind that are largely because of, you know, the advent of fracking. We now have really terrible chemicals that we can push into the ground and get resources that we couldn't get, 30, 40 years ago. This is not conventional drilling. And as a result, the fracking fields in the Rockies, both the U.S. and Canada, have been tapped for a handful of export projects. So our gas here in the U.S. Is cheaper than the gas that Asian companies can get from Asian fracking fields or supply fields. So it's a simple matter of economics. We have a cheaper supply. They want to have access to it. And one of the commodities that they want is methanol. So methanol, the way that methanol would be made is it would come in by pipeline, just like a regular gas pipeline, to a methanol refinery, where it would then be processed into liquid methanol. So it would go from gas to liquid, and then put on ships to go overseas to Asia. Once it's in Asia, the plan, according to the company, is to refine it even further into a product called olefins, which is an ingredient in plastics. So basically, this is a huge sort of plastics machine. And folks can, you know, do their part to reduce plastics locally. You know, you can refuse your straws, you can bring your own plastic bags, or you can also shut down some of these major supply chains that are being proposed here in the Pacific Northwest. I guess it's not an either or, it's an and.
Well, the other thing of concern has to do, let's get back to zoning. I was thinking about the power of zoning. We learned about it in Portland a couple years ago, and Portland passed the first in the nation ban on mass fossil fuel infrastructure within the city limits. And this has hopefully shut down any more proposals like the notorious Pembina liquid propane proposal in 2013, which frightened bejesus out of a lot of people here. Do you see the same issues? I mean, the zoning has already happened in Columbia County. I mean, they've changed the zoning. But in your fight in appealing it to the Land Use Board of Appeals, Scott, do you feel like this you could be creating some zoning precedents is actually based on Oregon land use law?
Well, I think the county's interpretation of our state laws is not correct. So I think LUBA will fix that, and they will verify, like they did in 2014 when this proposal came before them, and they remanded back to the county, and they said, Columbia County, you're asking for too many broad uses, and your justifications aren't tied to the proposal that you seek here. But you make a good point, Barbara, about the Portland fossil fuel ordinance that was passed recently and upheld by the Court of Appeals on a constitutional basis. And I think the underlying issue with that is that when we sited our industrial lands in cities, that was a long time ago, and we didn't have a great grasp on the seismic impacts that may occur in our community when we're siting these increasingly more volatile type of chemicals that we're storing next door to residential communities or agricultural communities. And so when we're looking at this rezone proposal, one of the required showings that they need to provide is that all the uses that are proposed, including the most egregious and most aggressive and most volatile compounds stored on site, can exist compatibly with the adjacent farmland and the uses that are on those lands. And this site in particular wasn't chosen as an industrial site because it was good industrial land. It was chosen because there is an existing dock for World War II ammunition shipping. And so we essentially have a grandfathered use on the existing Port Westward site, and now they're trying to double it. They already got their exception based on this dock, and they failed to even use all of that land right now. One of the other criteria that they need to fulfill is to say there's not other industrial land available for these uses. Well, at the existing site, there's vacant land, and the port just tries to explain that away. So that's pretty frustrating. But now that we know about the water impacts, especially in storm surges, flooding events, and seismic events, there simply has not been a showing that this will be compatible with agriculture.
Well, Tracy mentioned at the beginning of the show about the liquefaction factors in Kalama, which are of great concern about putting the methanol refinery there on dredge spoils. And there's been a lot of concern in Portland. If you're going to head up towards Kalaskanai, you pass by all these giant oil tanks along St. Helens Road, which are on, again, liquefaction sites. So is there even a good place anywhere, particularly in a region that's going to have a big earthquake one of these days, to build these things, or do we have to figure out a way to get rid of them all?
Well, I think we need to think about smart solutions to industrial siting. Of course, seismic activity can pose a huge risk to stored chemical compounds on site, so you'd want to be in areas that are away from major fault zones. And also, you need to think about the industrial wastewater that's coming off of these processing plants. So they have these stormwater plans, but they rarely acknowledge the impacts of a storm. And so you need to make sure you have right drainage, and putting it within a river basin so close to this high-value farmland simply isn't the right location.
I'm just wondering if there is a right location. I can't think of any place between here and Kalaskanai where I'd want to see this facility built.
Well, one of the considerations is alternate port sites, because one of the reasons that they are seeking this exception is based on the deep water port. And so we have asked the port to look at a number of different locations for siting. Remember, this rezone is asking for not just methanol, not just for energy production, but for a whole host of uses, including things like juice storage. So when you talk about impacts, the idea of storing apple juice is, and the impacts of that are completely different than the byproducts that you have coming off of, say, an ammonia plant or a methanol facility. And so the Luba had said in 2014, you can't pick the easy battles and then pick the easy answers and ignore the worst uses that are proposed. And that's what they did in 2014. That's what they did this past year. And so we're requesting them to look at all the ports that are available for export. So we have ports along the Pacific Ocean and throughout the Columbia River Valley.
Well, Tracy, I'm wondering, what is the response amongst your neighbors? How many people are with you trying to stop this zoning change and also trying to stop the methanol refinery?
Pretty much most of the people who are farmers out here that I know they're the ones who got me involved. So, I mean, there's very clearly anybody who is who lives out here, unless they work at one of the facilities, it's pretty clear that they would rather not. I mean, I just question the wisdom of having, methanol, natural gas, ethanol, and potentially Bakken crude all within a stone's throw of each other. Just think about that for a minute. If that's all operating at the same time, it sounds like a recipe for a disaster to me.
So I'm curious because, and a lot of these communities where these proposals are being sited up and down the Columbia River and further north in Washington and further south in Oregon, there's this argument that's being thrown at opponents, which is that we need the jobs. And so I'm wondering, is that one of the debates in Columbia County? Or are there people who are seeing this development of the port is a necessary way to build the economy?
I think they do. There is a faction of Klatskanai that believes that and I honestly believe they think they're doing the right thing by creating jobs and economy. In another world, maybe in the 1950s, that kind of development might have worked, and there probably would have been something a lot less incendiary involved. But now I think that there is definitely a divide between the population here about what the feeling is about whether the jobs are worth it or not.
Well, it seems to me there's a really big difference between storing apple juice, as Jasmine was saying, and storing methanol. Do you think there could be a lot more jobs created by doing more storing of blueberries and apple juice and shipping and growing? And do you see that there's a way to sort of direct the economic growth vision towards ways of sustaining agriculture as opposed to creating a whole new world of fossil fuel development?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the pressure is coming from, there's a lot of pressure coming from big business, obviously, the big corporate oil companies and methanol, and there's a lot of money behind the effort to industrialize this area. And if you can get a few key people in town to believe that jobs of any kind, no matter what, are worth getting, then the pressure is on to do that. But I do agree. I mean, I think there's a lot of people around here that are being employed by these farms. So in some ways, it's actually a trade-off. You're trading one kind of job for another. And, you know, if they were talking about putting storage of blueberry or apple juice, I wouldn't even be here right now.
Well, I'll just have to note that storage of a product that is grown on the land is a use that's allowed outright on agricultural land. So they wouldn't need a rezone to do
right.
that.
And they've been doing that for a long time all over Oregon.
That's required. And Barbara, if I could just for a moment speak to your question about this false dichotomy between agricultural and the uses in the environment versus industrial land. I don't think that's the real question here. I think the question is, what is the vision of the future of Columbia County? And what do the citizens and the residents of that area want to be known for? And you look at this proposal, and because it is not sited within a city, but it is on rural land, the port and the county have to demonstrate that this is indeed a rural industrial use. And one of the criteria for what constitutes a rural industrial use is a low level of jobs. So this idea that it's going to bring in hundreds of jobs to the community is inconsistent with what the port is saying. And then the third point I'll make is that this proposed rezone has been going on for almost 4 to 5 years, and there is an importance of having certainty for the landowners and the leaseholders of this agricultural land in the area so they can make their business plans and they can hire people long term.
Well, you're listening to the Locus Focus here on Cable Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle, and today we're talking about this proposed methanol refinery near Klatskanai, Oregon, and how it would impact the very strong agricultural base that the county's been dependent on for a long time. And my guests are Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey with Columbia Riverkeeper, Scott Hilgenberg, he's a land use fellow at Craig Law Center, and Columbia County farmer Tracy Prescott McGregor. And Tracy, it sounded like you just wanted to say something.
I just wanted to add that in fact, jobs do get created, and very large-scale jobs, whenever there's construction out there. And whenever there's construction out there, for the burst of time that they need extra people to build stuff and, you know, wire things and all that. There are many jobs created for a very short period of time, but long-term jobs are not necessarily promised in that number.
Well, Jasmine, I wanted to have you compare and contrast kind of the struggle going on where we're talking about now in Columbia County and the struggle that you've been also involved with in Cowlitz County, Washington, right across the river for, what, the last, I don't know how many years you've been fighting coal and now fighting methanol. Just in terms of the kind of community buy-in, the kind of community support you're finding for the proposals versus the community opposition and how these two groups are kind of living together and at each other.
Yeah, I think whenever you engage in a fossil fuel fight or any kind of fight where, you know, fossil fuels are either promised or somehow connected, you get, you know, people from various camps coming to the table. And I think that what we saw in Cowlitz County is, you know, overwhelmingly, you know, people were concerned about public safety. They were concerned about their health. They were concerned about the impacts to the river. And ultimately, those concerns translated into a strong environmental impact statement that outlined, you know, 9 significant and unmitigatable impacts associated with the coal export terminal, including increased cancer rates in the adjacent community. And that led to, you know, 4 separate permit denials from local and state agencies for that project. There's still a number of folks who are a handful of folks in the Cowlitz County community that are kind of holding on to this idea that those impacts can be, you know, mitigated away, and we should just proceed and ignore the facts that we know about the project. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, we can't go back in time. We can't ignore what we know about climate change. We can't ignore what we know about cancer risks. These projects, you know, may have been acceptable 50, 60 years ago when we didn't have that, you know, scientific background. But they're not acceptable now. And they're certainly not acceptable 50 years from now. And that's the timeline that these projects operate under. That's not a 1 or 2 year project. These are projects that we would live with. We would live with the impacts for half a century. And when people look at it using that lens, it becomes clear that this is not a legacy they want to pass on to their grandchildren.
Well, I'm remembering in the beginning of the struggle to stop the methanol refinery in Kalama that there was not, it seemed at the time, there was not a lot of opposition to it. It was kind of a small core of people. And that has really grown, obviously. And I'm wondering, I mean, I've heard stories, I think you've described it and some other people have described how if the first meeting, I think it was around the zoning change, actually, well, I'm not sure what it was. Anyway, in Klatskanai, around Port Westward, when there was first talk about building a methanol refinery there, and there was a comments meeting, and 2 people came out who were opposed to it, and everybody else was in support of it, and there were maybe 10 people there at all. So I'm just wondering how far is the Klatskanai area from attaining the kind of information and involvement that the Kalama region now has in terms of understanding the impact of this methanol refinery?
Sure. Well, we have learned both, you know, sort of through our anecdotal evidence, but also through some polling data around the coal export campaign, that the more people learned about the project, the more they opposed it. So, you know, if you just said, for example, coal export, what do you think of it? People may just say, oh, I'm neutral, or it sounds like a great idea. And then if you were to explain to them some of the impacts, they shifted. So we know that education is the key to getting folks to engage in opposition to these big fossil fuel projects. And I think that a lot of folks in Columbia County, you know, they're no strangers to these massive industrial, dirty, polluting facilities. You know, Columbia County fought off 2 coal terminals in 2013 and 2014. They're well aware of the impacts of these projects, and they know the drill and how to engage and fight these projects. You know, there's, like I said, that dormant oil by rail facility. People are watching that incredibly closely to see when the numbers shift and if we start getting, you know, oil trains through Columbia County, through Portland. So I think with the rezone, you know, because it's rooted in farming, and as a rural community, people have a connection to farmland, and the idea that you would trade farmland for industry, you know, and not only just, you know, trade those acres, but also negatively affect the existing farms that people are very proud of, the blueberries, the mint, at Port Westward. I don't think it's a trade-off that most folks in would want to see in their community.
Well, Tracy, since you're there, can you tell us mm-hmm. what your sense is of the community? And first of all, how many people are you aware of who are aware of what changing the zoning around this Port Westward property would have on their property and on their lands?
Oh, most of my neighbors, you know, anybody who farms out here, it's when you're a farmer, you care about the soil and the water. And those are two primary things that could potentially be affected. And, you know, and not only a livelihood, but, you know, you can't eat fossil fuels. But if you get fossil fuels in your food, you can't eat that either. So it's just one of those things that it's just pretty practical. We've been trying to, people have been trying to convince us that the two industries, the industry and farming, can coexist happily together. But from what I've seen, it's hard to believe that an accident is impossible. It seems to me that accidents are almost inevitable. And so the danger of putting these two industries so close together, it just seems a little bit myopic to me.
Well, I'm thinking about, there is a book that Andrew Nikiforuk wrote a couple years ago about this woman who was fighting fracking in Alberta, a bit north of Calgary. And she had farmland, and it was a pretty rural area, and her water was completely contaminated, as well as some of her neighbors. And she, I don't know if she's ever won. I mean, she's been fighting the fossil fuel companies up there for maybe 20 years. But in just reading the descriptions of what happened to her property and to her neighbors' properties, it was just appalling. And I'm wondering if you see the connection between what happens to the lands of people living close to where the gas is fracked, and you at the other end where you could possibly be living close to where this fracked gas is being processed, if you feel a kind of camaraderie with those people and maybe see a sense of your comrades in struggle.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I follow very closely a lot of battles across the United States, and I feel just as strongly for those people who are living around those fracked sites as I do for our communities all up and down, where from North Dakota to Oregon to Washington to wherever, because those chemicals are in there; they're not going anywhere. So it's, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's some long-term damage to people's health all surrounding any of these industries.
So what kind of visible opposition is being organized at where you are? Or is there any yet?
Where I'm?
Yeah.
In Klaskanai?
Yeah.
Well, several groups have gathered together and have been trying to focus sort of on one thing at a time. Mostly what we're trying to do is focus on the rezone appeal that Columbia Riverkeeper has presented. So we're really excited about that and grateful. But one of the most important things is just talking to each other and meeting. And there are several groups, Envision and Queen Columbia County and CC Sage, and that are different factions of people in Columbia County who are different citizen groups that are taking a good hard look at this and attempting several different things. And it's kind of difficult sometimes to get everybody on the same page, but that's what we're working on.
Well, I understand. I mean, some people are just talking about the zoning issues. Are there people who are also talking about the methanol refinery itself?
Yes, the methanol refinery has been sort of a slippery critter, because at first it didn't seem like there was much to really be upset about. But then the more people started looking into it, the deeper it got. And as we look out in our world and we see how much plastic is, you know, getting into our oceans and into our foods and our landfills, and, you know, I just read somewhere that it's in our water and bottled water, microplastics. So it's kind of like, why participate in any point along the fossil fuel sort of development, whether it be methanol or, well, methanol is actually a wood product, I believe, but still, why participate in creating, you know, the olefins that are going to end up in our oceans and landfills and perpetuate that as well?
Is there coordination between groups in your county and across the river in Cowlitz County?
Yes. Frequently we connect at larger meetings, which is helpful.
I mean, the main way across the river at that point is by boat, I take it. The river is very narrow. I mean, I've learned that because I've been spending a lot of time up in Kalama. But isn't it like that's like the narrowest point on the Columbia River downstream from the Bonneville Dam?
Yes. If you stand on Port Westward and look across, you can see Washington. You can see the traffic coming by. I think I've heard that it's like 1,500 feet. It's very, very narrow. And that's another argument that we've had, which is that they want to bring in, develop that dock so that they can bring in these big Panamax vessels. And the idea of turning a Panamax vessel around in that tiny, squeezed portion, it seems pretty difficult at best.
Oh, they can do anything to the river. You look at what they did at Swan Island in Portland.
That's true.
But I guess the question is, and I'll ask this from the riverkeeper, I mean, what do we want to do with the river? I mean, we've done so much, we being human beings, to really muck up the Columbia River. What do you see is, how do we kind of back away from at least 100-year legacy of engineering the river to human needs?
Right. I think the first question to ask is what do you want to see on the river in 50 years? And using that lens to identify what you would like to see placed on the river today is how we get to that answer. And then the second step is to understand the existing environmental protections or the existing land use laws that Oregon already has. And with the rezone at Port Westward, this is a prime example of us, you know, this rolling back existing protections that we already have. So Oregonians already put this land aside for agriculture production. And not like yesterday or 2 days ago, but, you know, this is land use that, it, you know, has been around for 50 years, since the 70s, 45
yeah.
years. And so the first step in asking what do you want to see tomorrow is, well, let's not roll back what we have today. And that's why, you know, it's great to partner with CRAG and Thousand Friends of Oregon to protect the existing farmland, because what we do know is, before we can answer the big question of, you know, what next, we should at least hold the line at what we currently have right now, which is outstanding farmland at Port Westward, an existing agricultural community that supplies blueberries, mint, cattle, to all of Oregon and throughout the nation. And those things we shouldn't simply trade away for, you know, an unknown fossil fuel development or any kind of development that could be incompatible with that existing industry.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. We're talking about the battle of in Columbia County of agriculture versus industry, and specifically about this proposed methanol refinery that would be built at Port Westward. And we're talking this morning with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey with Columbia Riverkeeper, Scott Hilgenberg with CRAG Law Center, and Tracy Prescott McGregor, who is a farmer out in Columbia County. Well, the last part of the show, I'd like to kind of focus a little bit on a victory. Jasmine helped organize this wonderful event last Thursday in Vancouver to celebrate the demise, the long coming demise of the Jacero Savage oil terminal in Vancouver. And I wanted to talk a bit about the taste of victory, how that victory happened, and how that can be maybe helpful in thinking about taking on the next step, which is fighting all these fracked gas projects around the region.
Yes. So my hat is off to the community of Vancouver and everyone who supported the community of Vancouver, Washington, in defeating what would have been North America's largest oil by rail facility, the Tesoro Savage Oil Terminal. It's a fight that has been ongoing since 2013, and the community there has been relentless in pursuing every single option to defeat that terminal. They not only organized over 100 local businesses to oppose the project. They not only had the support, you know, worked very closely with the labor unions at the ILWU, the Longshore Warehouse Union, and the firefighters unions. They elected two port commissioners who were opposed to the oil terminal, and they convinced EFSEC, the Energy Facility Siting Evaluation Council, to deny the permits for this project, something that, you know, is, you know, traditionally thought of as a rubber stamping agency, and then convinced Governor Inslee to uphold that denial. Every single opportunity where that project could have gained a foothold in the community, activists were very effective at preventing it. And I think that we need victories in this time, and people who are fighting fossil fuel projects in their own backyards, for the greater good, should look to the community of Vancouver and see what they did. It should be a blueprint for community members, because they did a phenomenal job of using every tool in the toolbox to get what they wanted.
Well, one of the things that was particularly striking to me was the transformation of Vancouver politics. I mean, it wasn't that long ago people would talk about this town across the river from Portland as Vantucky. And I think that people, particularly Portland activists who have spent time in Vancouver in the last 5 years working on that struggle, have really understood that Vancouver is a community to be reckoned with, and there's some really strong, wonderful people there. But it did seem to have a pretty retrograde city and county government, and not to mention its port commission. And it seems like there's been a lot of transformation that's happened there as well. I mean, I'm thinking about, particularly when we heard the news that the Vancouver City Council had come out unanimously against the oil terminal, this is a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was after a 7-hour public meeting, so I don't want to...
It's not easy.
It's not easy, but people stuck with it. It was the longest public meeting in the city of Vancouver's history, and it was worth every minute of those 7 hours that people were there testifying, and those the courageous leaders who listened to the public. I think that that's something that we often sort of forget about, is that elected officials are responsible, or are supposed to be responsive to the community members, and not some big projects coming through. And that was, I think, very disappointing. And with Columbia County, is at all of these rezone hearings, you know, the overwhelming majority of people were getting up in opposition to the rezone. They were speaking up for the farming community. They were either neighbors of the farming community, they were the farmers themselves, or they lived along the rail tracks and would somehow be impacted by industrial expansion. And two of the three county commissioners chose to ignore their own constituents in favor of this rezone project, and that was really disappointing.
Well, I'm thinking in Vancouver we saw some political shifts in terms of elected officials, not just on the Port Commission, but also in City Council and the mayor. And my mind goes back to a story of several years ago when they were fighting off a multitude of LNG terminals being proposed along the Columbia Estuary, and they transformed Clatsop County politics. So is there a possibility, and also, I mean, more recently, the new mayor of Kalama, who does not have actual say over the methanol refinery, but certainly has a bully pulpit, the person who was elected mayor is a strong opponent of the methanol refinery, replacing somebody who was a strong proponent of it. So do you see that there's a possibility of people in Columbia County, and I'm going to throw this out to Tracy as well, maybe starting to work on making some changes in who their elected officials are? Do you want to take that, Tracy, actually? Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yes, and you're seeing that the tide changing. It has fits and starts. We've got a good pro-environmentalist on the port, Paulette Liketowicz, and she's also running for commissioner. And we got Alex Tardif elected on the commission, and he's pro-farm and pro-environmental. And we're still working on it. It's it depends on who's running. We need to get good people running. And so it's over the years, several people have stepped up and started moving into that. And it would be nice to get some more young people. I really feel like this is their future. If we could inspire them to get active and get political, that would be another good way to start getting that political climate to change over time.
Well, one last area I want to sort of get back to this lawsuit and to the alliance. Is this the first time that Columbia River Keepers has worked directly with 1,000 Friends of Oregon in litigation?
I don't believe so.
I'm just curious.
I'm trying to think back to the previous rezone. They were not part of the rezone. You know,
it's a very powerful alliance. So that's kind of why I'm bringing that up.
Well, we're grateful to have Craig Law Center representing us. They represented us when we fought this rezone back in 2014 and convinced the Land Use Board of Appeals to overturn the rezone. And we are confident that we'll do it again. But Craig Law Center and Riverkeeper have worked closely together for many years. I guess a lot of folks might not know that Craig Law Center was helpful. They represented the Power Pass Coal Coalition along with Earth Justice when we fought the Morro Pacific Coal Export Terminal. So the legacy of collaboration between Craig and Columbia River Keeper goes back quite a long ways. And if I had my notebook in front of you, I'm sure I could say something similar about 1,000 Friends of Oregon. But we are very grateful to have their support as Oregon's premier land use conservation organization. It goes without saying that they're concerned about our farmland, and it's nice when we can work together.
Well, we're sometimes so compartmentalized that there's rivers over here and there's land over there. So that's one reason why I see it so powerfully, that having the two organizations working together, we're realizing our rivers course through the landscape, and protecting the rivers and protecting the land is really part of the same thing.
Yes, I think it really shows that this is a twofold bad idea. If you get a statewide land use watchdog group that essentially was established by Tom McCall to ensure that our land use safeguards and our social contracts between each other about how we use our land, that organization has joined Columbia River Keeper, who traditionally has sought to protect the ecological values of the Columbia River and the services that it provides, that we can all come together and we can file this appeal to LUBA is really powerful. And I'm so appreciative for the opportunity to work with Columbia River Keeper. And I collaborate with 1,000 Friends Mariel Darzan out in Bend on a number of projects. And so it's a really great collaborative effort.
So one last thing, Tracy, I'm wondering if there's anything that people who are listening can do to help out with what you're trying to do in Columbia County and how they can get more informed.
Well, there are plenty of groups out there that are working hard, like Riverkeeper. Getting the word out, educating yourself, understanding that what fossil fuels are and what they mean for our future, and understanding that has to change, that we all have to take a really good hard look at our economy and how it's run, and what thinking more in line with renewables and solar and wind for our energy, and that's a place to start. And then get involved with local government. That's the beginning. And then we just need more people who are educated and know the system and know what's going on to get into politics and change the way things are going.
Well, it sounds great. And I'm actually looking forward to spending some time in Kalatskanai in the near future to learn more about your struggle. And we'll be talking more about this, I'm sure, in the coming months. Probably do another show once you win the appeal.
Yes, once the decision gets reversed.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Jasmine Zimmer Stuckey and Scott Hilgenberg and Tracy Prescott McGregor for joining us and telling us your story, and we'll be in touch. Thanks a whole lot.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, Columbia River Keeper's point person for opposing methanol refineries in Northwest, along with Scott Hilgenberg with the Craig Law Center, and Columbia County farmer Tracy Prescott McGregor. And you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed, if you want to hear what you missed, or you just tuned in, you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus, and we'll have some links to appropriate places where you can find out more about this struggle. Next week, I'll be talking about what it means to create a just transition with Maria Hernandez Segoviano, advocacy coordinator for OPAL, Environmental Justice Oregon. My engineer is Ray. Thank you for stepping in today, Ray. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Cassandra Wilson. Thanks for listening.
If blood will flow when flesh and steel are one, drying in the color of the evening sun, tomorrow's rain will wash the stains away. But something in our minds will always stay.